Good to see many of you for a second time today, and welcome to others. As I said this morning, anytime you have a question, feel free to raise your hand, and if I don't see you, wave your hand so we can respond. We'll also have an opportunity at the end of the session to have questions and discuss anything else you'd like to bring up. Innovation in teaching in LIS professionals in the United States, and showing some of the examples first from my school, the University of Illinois, and then Heather will talk about some samples and examples from her school and her experience in terms of delivering education to professional librarians. The list I'm going to go through reflects both current innovations and some innovations that were implemented and then have, for a number of reasons, no longer been sustained. Sometimes the professor that initiated left and went to another university, but I still give them as examples because they were very successful when they were delivered, and I think they might find applications in other contexts in LIS education. The first innovation focuses on private sector interests. In the United States, in LIS education, since unlike other schools, we cannot assure that every graduate will be able to find a job in a library when they graduate. We've been looking at other alternative careers, and one of the alternative careers we've been looking at is in the corporate area, private corporate area of business and research. And so since 2004, we have regular meetings, at least every 3 or 4 months, with a group of representatives from major corporations in the region. Some of these names you may be familiar with, others you may not. Caterpillar, that's the company that has the large machines that moves earth. John Deere has both agricultural and other materials. State Farm Insurance is one of the largest automobile insurance companies in the United States, and Archer Daniel Midland, known locally as ADM. Archer Daniel Midland is an international company dealing with soybean products and has many international sub offices around the world. All of these are located within 2 hours of my university. That the international headquarters are located within 2 hours of my university, so we have potential access to the corporate management of these companies, and we meet with them, with interested faculty and students. We'll discuss possible ways the school, Graduate School of Library and Information Science, faculty and students can work with their researchers, with their management, on trying to solve problems they may have that involves information processing and information management. The corporate members have found this very useful and in fact have agreed to subsidize the meetings in terms of paying for our lunch when we meet, which is a good example of their interest and commitment in the activities. One more specific example, which was very successful, but the faculty member that initiated it left and went to another unit, another department. But while he was doing this, it was really impressive, working with a course in the MBA program, the Masters of Business Administration program on the Illinois campus, having students in his business intelligence course using the principles of special librarians and individual information consultants, working with members of teams of business research and planning, work with MBA students in the School of Business at the University of Illinois, and essentially the library and information science students were assigned to each group of business students had one library and information science students, in some case two, assigned to them to essentially become their special librarian for the semester as the business students pursued their special projects and research. The benefits of this were twofold. First of all, it gave the opportunity for the library and information science students to see the potential cross applications of the skills developed as a librarian, and it also sensitized the business students to the potential value of working with librarians in their career as a result of collaborating in what was essentially a graduate program in the Master's of Business Administration and a graduate program in Library and Information Science. This particular business intelligence course was taught, I believe, about 4 or 5 years before the individual left the program, and it certainly could be applied in other contexts. I would think wherever you had a school of business management or administration near a school of library and information science. And by the way, the feedback from the business students was very, very positive, because it saved them from having to go to the library to look up materials, and they really felt well about it.
I did that.
You did that course.
I did that course.
So it really existed. We didn't make it up. All right. The second focus I want to talk about is the social justice focus at Illinois. This is something that's been developed within the last 7 or 8 years. We've hired a number of faculty in this particular area. I'm getting a message about upgrade. Okay. One is the activities that take place in the community informatics studio courses. Now, community informatics, the term informatics in the United States is used differently than it is in Europe and many other parts of the world. I believe in much of Europe, informatics refers to computer science. In the United States, there's much more ambiguity about the term, and it's used widely in a number of different disciplines. And in library and information science, it is used fairly consistently to refer to activities of the interface of individuals or communities in a social group with electronic sources, electronic medium. And that usually involves computers, but it's not the software development type of research. Is more of how to work with interaction of computers and individuals in a social context. Do I have a mouse that I can take? Oh, there we go. The community informatics studio courses have been especially popular with students interested in working with special groups and outreach programs. One particular project they've worked with in the Chicago Public Library with, and again, for those of you that were in class this morning, you remember Chicago is not Champaign-Urbana or the University of Illinois. We're about 2.5-3 hours away by train, but students often go to Chicago to do research and to consult with libraries. In this case, it was the Chicago Public Library, and they had established a series of training programs in Chicago Public Library, particularly working in neighborhoods and neighborhood branches where the economically disadvantaged population would not have access to their own computers, and they would work with training and assisting those residents to use the computers in the library. We're not seeing a link here, but if you go to this link later on, you can get more information. Not sure how they can kill that, but let me try the, okay. Let me try the next one, which is, actually there are two elements, the East St. Louis Project and the San Tome Project. The East St. Louis Project, Chicago is an upper part of the state of Illinois, and East St. Louis is a lower southwest part, actually very close to Heather's State, Missouri, because St. Louis is in Missouri, and East St. Louis is in Illinois, and the Mississippi River divides the two. East St. Louis is probably has the largest number of poor people in the state of Illinois. than any other city in the state of Illinois. So about maybe 10 years ago now, our faculty and staff started taking our students to the East St. Louis area to work with schools, with pastors and religious organizations and churches to try to provide means of access to computer information for the very poor residents in those areas. They often were able to obtain donated computers to install in accessible areas such as community information halls or church basements where the public could come and gain access to them. And this is an ongoing project so that every year a group of 6 to 12 students go to East St. Louis, often for a week, sometimes 10 days, to work with the people in the community. It provides hands-on experience with the local residents, and the students gain access of skills in communication with a diverse population, as well as actual experience of the special challenges of communicating ways effectively to access information on the computer for those particular populations. Let's see if this is that saying it's not available? What? The San Tome project, as it says there, is an island off the coast of Africa that our graduate school of library and information science have been going to for about 7 or 8 years. This particular arrangement began when a graduate student from San Tome came to the University of Illinois Graduate School of Library and Information Science and was impressed by our program and said, you know, we could really use some help and San Tome to be more effective of communicating with our residents on the activities on the yes or no, does it work?
It works. Well, I wouldn't click on anything.
Okay. Let's see what happens. We worked with the local residents on installing computers. In fact, they shipped a total of 700 or several hundred computers to San Tome. Hooked them up, put them to work, encountered all the problems of the real world, such as electricity not always being consistently available, the problems of the computers not working after they traveled thousands of miles by airplane to arrive, and coming back then with various reports of applications of in those particular contexts. I think some of the special characteristics of the program. One of them, there was a paper presented at the Bobcats conference. Some of you may be familiar with Bobcats, a European symposium presented by the group of the library schools in Europe. Every January or February, this is presented. This year, I believe it's in Turkey. Next year, in 2014, it's going to be in Barcelona. And if you haven't been to Bobcats, why talk to your faculty that have participated? Okay, all right. Anyway, he presented the Bobcats. He presented a paper on his experiences. He was an African American and presented a very unique view. Well, his particular view was. For an African-American working in Africa, it was really a challenge to communicate with Africans in the expression of need and trying to develop and maintain the materials that would sustain the programs. So these have been two examples of social justice programs that have been effective for giving students applied experiences in the areas of social justice. And the most recent one is the Center for Digital Inclusion, which is a new research center established at the University of Illinois with funds provided by President Obama as part of the effort to get the economy going in the United States. Monies were included in these projects to essentially expand access to broadband internet, and especially into neighborhoods and communities where a minority of the population did not have access to broadband internet. In the city of Champaign-Urbana now, almost every neighborhood has access to broadband as a result of this particular federal program, and the effort now is to expand it into other related programs of theoretical and applied research on access, particularly of minority populations, financially disadvantaged populations, to the internet, and how that can assist the populations that use that in bettering their own lives and making access. It included not only access to the homes in the sections of the two cities that did not have internet access before because of financial restraints, but it also went to all libraries and all schools in Champaign and Urbana so that they could develop programs to communicate with the members of these communities on the internet as an intranet within Champaign-Urbana itself. A third category I'm talking about is the Center for Informatics Research. There's that word again, informatics. It's a very popular word in the United States right now. The Center for Informatics Research in Science and Scholarship, with a special data curation specialization within our school. We actually have about four, five, or six specializations that students may elect to concentrate on. Other specializations include archives management, community informatics, which we just spoke about, and digital libraries, and data curation is also one of them. And a significant amount of external grant funds from the National Science Foundation and other grant sources are helping to support this. What's really interesting about this innovative task within library and information science is not only is the library school have special training for students to focus on data curation, but libraries are also incorporating, particularly academic libraries, are incorporating data curation as part of their expanded mission. At the University of Illinois Library, they're hiring three or four new librarians to specifically work on data curation. Why? Because the government is requiring this of all National Science Foundation and other government grant, that if a government grant is received, the grant itself must indicate how the data gathered in the grant will be curated so information can be retrieved. Most of our past graduates in library and information science do not have these skills, so the special funding has enabled our school to develop a new program to be sure that our future graduates do have these data curation skills if they decide to utilize them in their jobs within library and other research organizations. We have practicums and internships. One innovative activity is the Alternative Spring Break. That applies campus-wide, not just to the library school. The Alternative Spring Break, the alternative is to, of course, going to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, or the other spots that students used to go to on spring break. Instead of doing that, students in the library and information science are going to places such as Washington, D.C. to work at the Library of Congress or the National Archives, to go to San Francisco Public Library. We even had one student that went to Berlin to work for a week in one of the special libraries in Germany. These are short-term experiences, but they turn to be very valuable for many of the students. Essentially, it's an opportunity to learn about the operation of another library, or of a library, of their choice, that they can make arrangements in to spend 5 days on the job, observing and doing tasks. And this has proved to be a very popular option. The school provides some funds for supporting travel to and from these points. The funds are obtained from prior graduates, from alums, as part of the annual gifts to the school, and are specifically earmarked for use for the alternative spring break for the students. The practicum course credit course, which we've had for at least 30, 40 years. In fact, I will take a little bit of credit for having instituted the practicum at the University of Illinois Graduate School of Library and Information Science, because when I was a student there, many of the my colleagues were very frustrated about how they would spend all this time at the university library school, but unless they were employed part-time in the library, they never had the opportunity to work in a library while in school. And so a group of us, there were actually about five or six of our students, this was back in the 1960s when students were not shy, and when we finished our anti-war protests, we went to the library school and said we'd like to have a practicum. It was a challenge because the university said, what do you mean practical? This is a theoretical research institution. We don't want to give you credit for actually doing something on the job. That's an apprenticeship, and universities are not involved with apprenticeships. So it took about 2 or 3 years to convince the university this was a positive aspect. So now we have a master's students can take one practicum course for up to 2 hours credit in a school, a library, in a public library, academic library, or any other enterprise where they are supervised by a professional librarian. And I would say probably about half of our students do take a practicum course. This is not, well, it's a little bit like your internship, but then again, it's not, because the internship you have here is a 90-day period. This goes over a period, a total contact of, I believe it's a 100 hours, stretched over 15 weeks. So you're working maybe several hours a day for a week, or you can actually combine it. There's a lot of flexibility in it. It's not required. It's elective from our students. And then there's the concept of the university library as a teaching library. I don't know how it is in Europe, but in the United States, there are such things as teaching hospitals, which essentially will have medical students involved with local hospitals and learn part of the treatment of medicine through that process. So the concept of a teaching library is to have library tasks handled by professionals working with students on particular projects. This has been especially applied in the areas of digital librarianship, where new and innovative tasks have been pursued. And our engineering library on campus is actually one of the libraries that has most utilized the teaching library concept, and the students that work in the engineering library or students that volunteer in the engineering library. Just say in passing, getting a little bit ahead, anticipating perhaps further discussion this afternoon about the agreement between NCEB and the University of Illinois, that many of our students at the University of Illinois in our graduate program are interested in exploring the possibility of using that exchange under the alternative spring break. A lot of questions arise whether that would be too short of term, but they at least would like to discuss the possibility of coming to Lyon and working in the public library or a university library for a week, for 5 days of intensive work and getting experience as part of our overall agreement. There are many other examples, and actually Heather will talk about a number of additional examples, but I think probably the most innovative program in the last decade has been in the area of online degrees. 35 of the more than 58 accredited programs in the United States and Canada offer degrees online. This is the fastest area of student enrollment in the United States. Many schools, the majority of the students obtain their degrees online. San Jose, I think, has 500 students or hundreds of students, all of which, practically all of which, are online students. There's a great variation from school to school. At my school, over half of our students are online. Other schools, 80 to 90% of the students are online. I visited a school recently where about 90% of the students were not on campus. And that particular school, and a number of others, they never had to be on campus. They simply enrolled on the computer, and they graduated on the computer. So it was all completely accomplished in an online environment. The WISE program, I spoke with one of the smaller groups this morning about it. This is the program that the cooperation in the United States and Canada, actually in several other countries, Australia and the United Kingdom, have members of the WISE program. This is where people share coursework, courses offering. Most common are courses that are not extremely popular. One of the examples I used this morning was the theological librarianship course, which we happen to teach online at Illinois, but we have many students in one of the other 17 WISE schools that enroll in their local school, pay their tuition locally, and get their credit for the degree locally by enrolling in this school in WISE. There is a membership fee. It does vary. I think it's about $10,000 for some schools and less for others. And it's administered by a consortium of the library schools in the United States, Canada, and elsewhere to see to it that the credit is transferred appropriately and properly. The examples of the courses that are being offered next semester on WISE, not by my school, but by other schools, our students will be taking because we don't have the similar course offered that semester, is the encoded archival description course, information services for special needs population, social media for information professionals, and information ethics. It's interesting because information ethics, I have attempted to, I developed the course and attempted to teach it twice at the University of Illinois as an on-campus course, and twice it failed to make the minimum number of students enrolled. I mean, you have to have at least 6 students enrolled in the course at the University of Illinois for it to be offered, and I received, I think, 5 students each time I tried to teach the course. This is where WISE really works well, because if you have a course that there are not sufficient critical mass of students to take it on campus, if you can bring together 5 or 10 other campuses, you can usually have enough students to offer the course. And so that's the great advantage of spreading around the responsibility for teaching in WISE. And I'll turn it over to Heather, who will talk about some of the innovations that she's been involved in.
I'll stand up.
Okay.
Okay, so just to be clear, I am a graduate of Terry's program. I was his student. I did do the business information class. I did do a practicum. And I did work at the teaching library, the university library at the University of Illinois. So what Terry is suggesting to you, all of these ideas, they really work. I approve of them. And now I have a PhD and I teach at the state that is next to Terry's. So I teach in the state called Missouri. We have a much smaller program. So rather than to describe to you similar initiatives to Terry's, I thought I would take a slightly different path and talk to you about some of our online initiatives. What I didn't clarify is that my school, the School of information science and learning technologies trains people who become librarians, but also there is a program for students who want to be involved in educational technologies. So educational technologies from kindergarten on through university levels. So it's a good complementary group of faculty and students who are interested in learning and access to information. So the way the Library and Information Science program works, it's different from Terry's, so I will just clarify because it is a different model. We have our main campus in the middle of the state, where I put the MU, that's University of Missouri. I don't know why the U comes under the M, but it does. University of Missouri is in Columbia. We have large metropolitan areas on either end. On the east end, we have St. Louis, that Terry mentioned earlier. It's very close to Tom Sawyer. Tom Sawyer is just up a little bit north on the Mississippi, and he would take a boat down a raft with, what was the guy? Anyway, he would take a raft down to St. Louis. So we have a cohort group.
Huckleberry Finn.
Yes, with Huckleberry Finn, that's who I'm thinking of. Thank you, Terry. We have a cohort of students, many of whom work full-time, and they take their classes part-time with us in St. Louis. On the other side of the state, we have Kansas City. Kansas City is the beginning of the West. We don't have cows there, but lots of barbecue.
It's true.
We also have in the southern part of the state, it's the town that Brad Pitt grew up in. He's not from California, he's from Springfield, and that's in the southern part of the state. It's one of the largest metropolitan areas down there. It's quite small compared to Chicago, but it is a sufficiently large area. And then we also are the official library school for the state of Nebraska. Nebraska is... Yeah, there's not much going on in Nebraska. It's up and over. There was no point in showing it. So we do have four cohorts of students located around the state and in Nebraska, and we also have people who coordinate at each location. We actually have a memorandum of understanding with two of those universities located in those towns, the university in Springfield, which is the Missouri State University, not the same system, and the University of Nebraska. So those memoranda of understanding allow them to give library and information science courses that are for certificates in school librarianship, and we accept those classes towards the accredited Master of Library and Information Science. So everyone's happy. So those are the locations. We do offer classes face-to-face in each location. We offer courses that are entirely online. We tend to offer those synchronously so that we all at the appointed hour show up online. We use Blackboard Collaborate. I'll talk more about that if you want in a minute. We also have hybrid classes to us. That means that we have online classes for 3 weeks, and then one of the faculty members drives to the remote location. So that for us is hybrid. We'll meet the students 4 times per semester, spread out over the semester with content in between. We do not have an online program per se. You cannot live in China and be involved in our program. At the University of Missouri, we are stars. Our course management system, as I mentioned, is Blackboard. I did want to talk about some innovations just because they are things that we try, and sometimes they work. So I thought I would share with you. I have also used Google Sites. which is free through Google, as a way of organizing all of the people in those various locations who teach face-to-face cataloging classes. So in the United States, you may realize, you may not realize, we still teach cataloging. I understand in France you're much more interested in administration, but we do teach cataloging, and I'm the responsible party for all of the different instructors. So one way that we coordinate with each other is through Google Sites. We can share lectures, we can share homework assignments, we can share reading material that we want to assign to students. So it's not only students who are using as a way to learn these course management sites, it's also the instructors using them as a way to communicate with each other. So this was the Google site that I made for cataloging and classification. And we restricted it, of course, so our students can't look up the answers, but all of the instructors have access to this site, and it's worked out very well for us. Another thing that we've been experimenting with in terms of technology, as you can imagine, grading a lot of cataloging records over and over as students get better and better at creating a cataloging record is time-consuming for the faculty and frustrating for the students. So what we have started to do in my class anyway is we have used a wiki, and students will create a record and they will post that record to the wiki. As part of their assignment, they must then go and review the records of other students and provide feedback. That feedback sometimes is correct, sometimes it's incorrect, but no matter what, it forces everyone to ask questions about the right way to do something. And we end up getting to the bottom of a lot of questions that I can't anticipate they will have. The students who understand the concepts very well end up going on to almost teach the others, and it reinforces in their own heads the concepts. So this has been very successful. When the students turn in their assignment to me, the end result is very, very good. And that's what we want. We want students to create good work and to turn in good work. So this is just within Blackboard, the wiki that we use. Here's the very end of the cataloging record, and then the comments. And the students are very kind to each other because they know they want other students to be kind to them. So we have things, comments like, "Amy, this looks really good," which is wonderful to see the students so supportive of each other. And then things like, "Not 100% positive, but you might need to look into something else." And then that begins the conversation of, well, maybe we need to find out more. I also teach a class called Emerging Technologies in Libraries. And one of the things that we have done 2 years in a row in this class is to report on the new technologies that students are investigating using Twitter. So they are required to create a Twitter account. They are not required to use their names. They can make up a name, that is fine. But they are required to communicate over Twitter. And it always is a struggle in the beginning because they hate it. Because students in library and information science in the United States, Terry may not agree, they like to talk and they're long-winded and to make them speak in, get an idea out in 140 characters is very challenging. But they get very good at it by the end, and they all like Twitter by the end. It's wonderful to see. So you can look on Twitter right now. We're finishing up our semester, but it's MU for University of Missouri, MTech is the hashtag we've been using. So they begin to have conversations with each other, have conversations with people outside of the class. It's all anonymous because it's using that Twitter handle that they've made up. So maybe it's the student's real name, but maybe not. It's the choice of the student. And then it ends up being a record of their online involvement with social media that they can share with future employers. Look at all of these great communications I've had. Look at all of my followers, which is important now. More and more I talk to people in libraries, and Terry may agree, that when hiring new librarians, they want those new librarians to have skills that no one already has. Terry was talking about digital curation. We have a lot of people in Missouri who want to hire students with digital skills, especially with social media. So this is one artifact. The final thing I'll mention is that in service learning, so this is different from the practicum because this is part of a class where a component is to do work that will be of benefit to the community at large. So the record, the cataloging record that I showed you, was actually a Dublin Core record for a master's project that was done by students at Binghamton University in New York State. And we cataloged those records for those capstone projects so that they could go into the online catalog and digital repository of Binghamton State and be searchable by anyone. So we used the Rosetta software package from Ex Libris. We had a login. Each student was responsible for cataloging fully, including subject headings and everything else, these projects, and then they became available on the web. So it's we're very proud of our work. We see our work being used, and that's very meaningful to us. So this, if you go to Binghamton University Library's website and search in their online catalog, you will find capstones that were cataloged by my students, and they did a good job. And just finally, I'm very excited about this. I will be teaching a class called Metadata, and one of the projects that we'll be doing, it's not truly service, but we will be providing a service. We will be encoding using TEI, Text Encoding Initiative, some letters that were scanned by a doctoral student in the French department. And we will be making those letters, they're in the public domain, so we have permission to do this. And we will be making those letters available through our institutional repository. So again, work that our students do will be applicable outside of our class, and it's a very hands-on and practical project that we have to make more concrete the ideas that we learn in class. Back to you, Terry.
All right. Well, just to wrap things up, talk, answer any questions or explore other possibilities, our exchange between our two schools, and the fact that I have for faculty here or students interested in coming and doing some study with faculty at Illinois and some specializations. If you go to this link, you will find the list of all of our faculty with their research interests and areas. And that would be an opportunity for you to initiate a communication. I would suggest if you initiate the communication, you copy me in. My name is Weech, and my address is Weech, W-E-E-C-H. @illinois.edu, and that way I can encourage my colleagues on the faculty to establish a communication between our two schools. And that applies to students as well as faculty here at NC.
Do you have any question?
Let me also add, we have within our American Library Association student chapter in the school, we have a subcommittee on international librarianship, and there are about 12 students in that particular subcommittee that are very excited about the potential collaboration between students here and the students back in Champaign-Urbana. And at least the majority of the members of that subcommittee speak sufficient French that they'd like to have you listen to them at least and give them some opportunity to practice French.
Some question? I have a question about the social justice focuses. Do the students who follow this focus have some credits?
Well, yes, for course credit, you're referring to. Yes, they are enrolled in a course that results in 2 to 4 hours. In fact, some of the studio courses under social justice, your question was related to social justice, get up to 6 hours credit because it's a lot of work to go to East St. Louis for a week. And you're usually working 8, 10, 12 hours a day while you're there. So there is a college credit given for that project. Well, I hope, I know we're going to see some people coming in for the INSEAD internship. We've already had 2 people in past years, and hope to have many more in future years. And let me say that even though Champaign-Urbana is not Chicago, the students from INSEAD that have come to Champaign-Urbana, I think, have been very pleased with the experience. And in fact, many of the librarians they've met and worked with continue to communicate with them once they return to France and work in the university libraries or Bibliothèque Nationale or whatever library that they particularly return to in their jobs.
I would like to talk about the possibilities about the online courses you give the student. Would be available to students in NC free of charge, like a real exchange?
Well, that's a fair question. And the answer is it would have to be negotiated. But I think there is a possibility, especially with our exchange agreement, to at least arrange initial communication, maybe jointly teaching a course on a shared topic interest. As I told some of you this morning, we've done this with a number of other schools in Norway and in Sweden and Denmark. So it's certainly worth, in my opinion, exploring for INSEAD and the University of Illinois. Perhaps just to exchange guest lectures. Say we're teaching, pick a course at random, a course on management of libraries. We teach management of libraries every semester. Perhaps we could coordinate and have a number of special sessions whereby we would be able to have the courses simultaneously on the internet. We have video one way, but we certainly have voice. And also using the chat system on the internet. It'll be a question of coordinating our software and technology. We've also done it in the past with television transmission, which is another option for sharing particular course lectures. So I would encourage you to explore it on your side and share your explorations on our end so maybe we can do something in the future. Well, thank you very much, and I
think I have another question.
Okay, good.
Sorry. We have here 2 students who could be interested to come for a semester.
Right.
They are shy, so they don't ask a question, but one question could be, what's the level of English they need?
Well, certainly, how should I phrase this? First of all, if you've traveled to the United States, you know there's a, because we have such a diverse population of English speakers as it is, there's considerable flexibility among English listeners to a wide variety of levels of skills in English. And so I have never encountered a student who is engaged with faculty and students at the university, regardless of the language background, if they have sufficient English to ask initial questions, the communication is established, so usually the ultimate answer can be achieved. So there's a very open attitude towards working with non-English speakers to solve communication problems, both at my university and I think in general in the United States. That is, to some extent, makes up for the lack of knowledge of Americans of other languages, which is a deficit that we do have and recognize in the United States.
And I'll just add to that. Maybe I should come over here. I'll just add to that, if you're worried about turning in papers in English because your written English isn't as good as you would like, the library students at GISLIS are very kind people. And they're usually very hungry. And if you would cook a French meal for any one of them, I think it would be very likely that the students would be willing to help you. There's always a way. Don't not go because of your language skills. That's an excuse. You can always find a solution. People are so friendly in the United States. Many of you have visited. You know this. People will help you. So, especially librarians.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes, we're recording this, so you're on the record.
Yeah, you mentioned the social networks, Facebook or Twitter. What is exactly that you're trying to do with your online presence? I don't know, in Illinois or in Missouri.
I will let Heather answer this, since I'm a, as your teacher knows, a non-participant in Twitter, even in the IFLA Twitter item. So Heather, handle it.
We study social media. We study personal branding and institutional branding. So last evening, for example, I was asleep, sort of, during my class, during the synchronous class. And what the students did to solidify their ideas about their own personal branding, they took the Strengths Finder test through the university. Are you familiar with this?
I'm not familiar with
it. It's the new Briggs-Myers
personality
test. So instead of focusing on your personality type compared to other people, five traits that are identified about you are put forth so that you understand your own strengths. The idea is focus on your strengths, not on your weakness, and build your brand around your strengths. So we had an hour and a half long session on building personal brands based on strength. And all of that can be applied to work in a library, be it a public library or an academic library. So those are the sorts of things that we're doing with our online presence, trying to understand that it's a method for communication, not just diffusion of information, but two-way communication, trying to understand how that's done successfully. So students, for example, this may be too much, but students made a video and then shared the videos, and that's very fun. Students made a multimedia resume or curriculum vitae to, again, talk about their strengths. What other assignments? They did a social media policy for a library. So things that are practical as we talk about sort of some of the big picture things.
you talked about the WISE program, and you said that it was the sharing of credit and courses between among the 17 schools. But from which schools students get their grade?
The instructor of the course, for example, the theological librarianship course that one of our teachers is teaching, would give the grade. And the grade, though, then would be recorded in each of the other individual schools. The beauty of the WISE program is the financial benefits to the students. They don't have to pay Illinois tuition. Let's say they have a scholarship at the University of Missouri. They can then pay the Missouri tuition so that it's transparent in their coursework. There's no evidence that they took an Illinois course on their transcript. It's a Missouri course that they took while they were in the school there. So it really is a mechanism designed to benefit the student, and it seems to be very effective in that way. It essentially opens up to those 17 students, to those 17 schools, any of the courses that are taught by any one of the 17 schools that are not taught at the school where the student's wanting to take the course. For instance, a student from Illinois could not take a course in library administration in WISE because we teach library administration every semester. But they can take many other courses that are not taught at Illinois through the program and essentially pay the Illinois tuition and get the Illinois transcript. But the grade comes from the teacher, wherever that whatever school that is, transferred then to the Illinois student's transcript.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.